Hello, and welcome to the business of podcasting. I'm your host, Craig Hewitt from Podcast Motor. Here, each week, I'll sit down with one of the leaders in podcasting to find out how they're using this fantastic form of content marketing to connect with their audience, grow their brand, and ultimately build their business. If you're not already podcasting, then today is the day to start, and here we'll show you how. Okay, let's get on with the show. All right, welcome back to another episode of the Business of Podcasting. Today we have a bit of a different guest on the show. We've had a lot of other podcasters on, and this week I guess is the same. We have Rob Walsh, Vice President of Podcaster Relations at Libsyn. So, Rob, how you doing?
Great. Thanks for having me on, Craig.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So the show is all about the business of podcasting, as the name suggests. And I think, Rob, you and what you guys are doing at Libsyn are going to offer really nice insight into the state of podcasting from your perspective will be really interesting. But you guys are also podcasters as well, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I've been podcasting since 2004. I've worked for Libsyn since 2007, so I just passed actually on my 9-year anniversary this week.
Wow, so that was before sort of iTunes and everything with podcasting, huh?
Yeah, when I started podcasting, there was no iTunes support. If you wanted to listen to a podcast, you had to jump through more hoops than podcasters have to jump through today just to make a podcast.
I can imagine. Yeah, I see. It's really, I mean, the adoption of podcasting is no surprise with how easy, you know, folks like Libsyn and maybe folks like Podcast Motor and some of our editing services are making things these days. And the adoption of podcasting has really gone vertical in the last 2 years, I would say, really. It's just amazing how many new shows are popping up.
Yeah, I mean, there's been a lot of new shows, but I think, you know, when we look at the growth, it's been a steady growth as far as downloads go. I think there's been a lot of media coverage the last 2 years. I think more than anything else, there's been a plethora of media coverage thanks to shows like Serial and whatnot. But I always like to say, podcasting made Serial. Serial didn't make podcasting.
Sure, sure. No, I mean, I think that the folks from NPR and Ira Glass and all those folks really set the stage for Serial. I think you're absolutely right. I mean, without all the things those people had learned for all those years, Serial never would have been possible.
Well, it goes beyond that. If the medium podcasting wasn't here, Serial never would have been possible. It wouldn't have been possible to put a Serial type show up on the radio. So I think you have to take away the production part of it and look at the medium and how it was delivered and the fact that there was an audience that was willing to consume it and get out there on that type of content. That content never would have been up on the radio. There's no way it would have gone on the radio. So that's why when I say podcasting made Serial, it has nothing to do with the production. It has to do everything with the medium and the community that was created. And that's been fostered. And the fact that any content can get up there and be popular and you know, you've got shows like Hardcore History, you know, Dan Carlin, which gets 4 million downloads an episode. It's about history. Mm-hmm. You'd never get that show. Would you make it on, you know, you'd be hard-pressed to get that show on a local radio station, more or less 4 million, you know, radios that reach 4 million people.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, I think it's interesting talking about Hardcore History. It's one of like two or three shows that I listen to every episode of, and it's just wonderful. I think that he does a very good job of making it palatable for us listeners to deal with a 3-month lag in between episodes, and it's totally understandable. I mean, it's essentially an audiobook that he's producing by himself, and there's no guest or anything to bounce the energy back and forth with. But you know, how do you? I don't know how much you know about his show and his business, but for folks like that, I mean, that's one of the questions we get is, you know, how can I monetize my show? Well, and I know that Dan has like a paid sort of back end for some of his archives, but generally for shows like that are what I would call an entertainment show, what are you seeing for folks doing a good job of monetizing that style of show in their business?
Well, I mean, I help Dan monetize. So part of the job I do at Libsyn is help bring people money. Now, Dan makes more money from his from his subscribers, you know, donate a buck a show, as the call out goes. I also, if you hear any advertising on there, he works with us for advertising. So I understand that. And by the way, I don't know when this is going to go up, but new episode of Hardcore History should be out here soon in early mid August. So he's almost done with the next episode. Because I'm a huge fan, by the way, of his show as well. I've listened to every episode. Best podcast out there, in my opinion. But I'm biased. I like history shows.
Yeah.
And how he monetizes, again, it's tough for him because he does it so infrequently. So he actually makes more from the people that are donating because they're willing to come back and wait. The advertisers, it's tough to tell an advertiser, okay, the next episode's going to be, it might be October or November. Mm-hmm. And maybe December. It could be September. More than likely October. And I'd say early November. You know, and that's how the conversation goes right now with advertisers. Most podcasts do release on a more regular basis and advertising is one part of it, but I always say to people, don't make advertising your only part of it. Like most of the big shows out there are monetizing through multiple streams, not just advertising. They do have their premium offering or something special, you know, VIP section, whatever you want to call it. That other part for revenue in many cases is bigger than the advertising or sometimes the same. Mark Maron at one point had 43,000 paid subscribers to his premium content, which was nothing more than his back catalog.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So speaking of premium content, I know you guys offer sort of paid only feeds for shows. And this is something I've kind of knocked around in my head is, you know, there are some shows, you know, like Mark Maron or Hardcore History, people would pay money for every episode. Do you see that ever coming of like, you know, paid podcasting subscriptions, like the version of a membership site being more mainstream?
If you go 100% paid, you will not succeed unless you have a big celebrity.
Uh-huh.
You have to offer free and premium. It has to be a freemium model.
Yeah.
It has to be like Hulu Plus. If you're trying as an individual podcaster, and I've seen people do this and they want to do this and they come in, they go, oh, every episode's going to be locked down. And I'm like, it's not going to succeed. And it doesn't. If you want, because the thing is, you're going to lose people over time. You're going to lose some of those membership people. And it's really hard to promote your premium content if you don't have free content to help promote it.
Hmm.
So the best model really is some content free, some content premium. And that is something that we can do for you. You know, at Libsyn, we do that. You know, look at Ben Greenfield. He's got it. Aisha Tyler. There's many others. We do Adam Carolla's. We create an app for you, and it's a mixture of free and premium content. It's all available in the app, and it's not a lockdown feed because RSS feeds go way over people's head. When you say RSS to most average everyday consumers, they're like, huh? They have no idea that iTunes, when they click that subscribe button, there's an RSS feed behind it, your mother or your dad. So, but they understand apps, they understand Netflix. And if you have a model that's kind of like that, where it's an app, they can log in and they get access to the content, that people understand.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
When you start trying to do lockdown premium RSS feeds, you got to put a password in, forget it. It's over. You've really reduced your potential audience to just a super tech group. A very small super tech group. So don't make the mistake of doing that lockdown RSS feed. I've seen people do that, and it just doesn't work.
So from from a sort of high level, can you run through how the premium feed and app that you would create for someone's show works at Libsyn?
Yeah, what you'll get is you get an iOS app and an Android app and a Windows Phone 8 app where content is locked down. And then the end users can put in a password, username, password one time, they sign up and they pay a monthly recurring subscription fee, or you can make it 3 month or 6 month or 12 month. They're all recurring fees, just like Netflix. And what you can do as the producer is you can say, I want this content free, certain episode when you release it, I want it to be free all the time, or I want it to be free until there's, you know, it's 25th or the 10th free episode in my feed, and then it drops off and then it becomes premium only.
Mm-hmm.
And then you can do some episodes that are premium from day one. And the people that have the most success, like a Ben Greenfield, what he actually does is he'll release some content that goes to the app only as free. He drives people to his app by saying, hey, you want to see this video? Go to the app. And then he'll have some app premium only content. So the only way to get it is then in there. And what happens is when people go in and they're looking through the episode list, they'll see the content and they'll see some are marked as premium and they're locked. So they see what they're missing. So I would say if you really want to get a good look at a good implementation, go look at the Ben Greenfield app.
Sure.
And free app to download, and that's where you get a good percentage of his audience is downloading it. I think Mark Maron at one point in time had he had over 250,000 unique users download his app. Not 250,000 downloads, but 250,000 unique Apple IDs and Amazon and Google Play IDs had downloaded that app. I mean, had downloaded millions of times. But
that's amazing.
That's like, you know, half his audience had downloaded the app at one point.
No, that's amazing. What kind of, talking about sort of the growth of podcasting has been sort of linear recently, maybe a little more than that. What kind of trends have you guys seen with the premium and paid versions of folks' shows? Has it been keeping up with the overall growth of podcasting?
Well, we've seen a lot more people going to premium. We're seeing more and more people doing it, going that route. Again, as there's more podcasters coming into the space, and we are seeing more people coming into the space, there's more of them are looking for different ways to monetize. So a certain percentage are saying, yes, I want to do this. Now, you have to look at the fact that when you do premium, you have to be realistic about this. You're not going to get half your audience that's going to pay for your premium content, no matter how good you are.
Yeah,
the best of the best, like Mark Maron, was at 10% of his audience. Most other people are lucky to get to 5%. So, if you want to set a goal at 5% of what your free audience is to be able to convert them to premium. And typically, if you get past 1% or 2%, you're doing well. And getting 5% is pretty much knocking it out of the park.
Yeah. I mean, that's a testament to how tough it is to monetize that way. I mean, most of the conversations about monetizing a show with our customers are, the podcast is a form of content marketing, like your blog. It won't make much significant money from sort of direct advertising or sales or premium subscriptions, but the way to monetize it, and we see this with folks like John Lee Dumas or whoever, is marketing selling your own products within the show, mm-hmm. and through your content. I think that's just in terms of sort of owning the whole platform and the scale and the ability to really make the business really run. I think that's the way, for me, that's what we encourage most folks to do when they ask us how to monetize their show.
Yeah, when someone comes to me and says that they're going to start a podcast and their goal is to make money through advertising, I say, well, you might as well take all the money you're going to spend on the equipment and go to the horse track. You have better odds.
Yeah.
There's only about 1 in 12 shows make money from podcasting through advertising. And so, there's what, 8 horses running? So you really do actually have better odds at the track.
Yeah. No, it's amazing. It's amazing. And I think it's great. I mean, for us, it's great because a lot of folks really get the value of content marketing. And our goal really with this show and in general is to make it easier, and you guys do a great job with it too, make it easier to integrate podcasting with blogging or YouTube video or whatever. I think that it's nice that it's mainstream enough now to where it's almost expected of some of these big brands to say, okay, yeah, we definitely have a blog, we have a YouTube channel, we have a podcast. Those are kind of the trifecta of things that a lot of the big online brands are doing these days. We see a lot of syndication of content from like the show notes that we create for podcasts going over to folks' blogs. Are you guys seeing anything really unique in terms of how people are repurposing that content on their own sites instead of just the show notes that someone would see, a listener would see, like on an iPhone app?
Well, show notes are good for Google SEO. And if you have some detailed show notes, and you can do that, if you're scripting, you may want to put them up as show notes. But I think a big misnomer out there is that there's a lot of consumption happening at people's websites, and there isn't.
Mm.
I'll ask you this question. You said you're a big Dan Carlin fan. How many times have you gone to the Hardcore History website?
Never, yeah.
Okay. Right. I mean, that's the reality is the majority of people that listen to podcasts never go to the show's website, but it's still good to have the website there. You have to have that presence. Now, too many people put way too much emphasis on the website. They're like, oh, you have to have a WordPress site. You got to do all this stuff. You don't need that. Matter of fact, you look at the biggest shows out there, and the websites are usually the most banal sites. You know, they're very simple. I think Dan's is a Squarespace site. You don't need these great websites to grow a podcast. The reality is Mark Maron grew his website and grew his podcast and took off, and he was just using the simple Libsyn blog page. That was it. You know, it was no third-party in-depth website. If you have great content, people will find it. And the bigger the shows, the smaller the percentage of their audience that comes back to their website. So it's the niche shows. You know, if you have a real niche show and you think your audience is going to be 100, 200 people, then yeah, your website's probably really important to you. But if your goal is to be really grow out their big brand, it's actually going to be the smallest part of it. If, again, primary goal here is your podcast, not your, you're not doing a podcast to promote your website. You know, there's different reasons for podcasting. Some people podcast to promote their website, which is a great thing to do, by the way. If you're a blogger and you don't have a podcast, you're shooting yourself in the foot, because there's about 2,000 bloggers for every one podcaster. And that ratio goes to 7,500 to 1 when you talk about female bloggers to female podcasters. So if you're a female blogger right now and you don't have a podcast, you are missing the great opportunity to stand out from your crowd by going out and podcasting.
Yeah. We just did a blog post on women in podcasting about a week ago. So it'll be two or three weeks when this goes out. But it's nice. We you know, sort of drew out a few of the really big women in podcasting. I think in the tech world, at least, maybe not in content, but in the tech world, the gender gap is much less in podcasting than it is sort of overall in tech, which is really nice to see. But yeah, I agree. I mean, most of the shows you see still are hosted by men.
It's about 15% of podcasters are female. That's it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's huge opportunity, right? If, like you said, yeah, female bloggers, it's a great opportunity to stand out. Yeah. So we were talking about the websites, and one of the things that we see as kind of the holy grail for a lot of podcasters who are promoting their site is getting people, you know, they're walking the dog when they listen to the show, and how do you get them to come back home and open their laptop and go to your website to check something out? And we try to come up with a lot of creative ways, you know, these calls to action to say, hey, come back and, you know, sign up for my email list or whatever. Have you seen anything really effective in podcasters that you guys work with kind of at your level that has done a good job of drawing people back from the show onto people's websites to get them kind of in their world?
People will put some bonus content. They'll say, hey, and they'll talk and say, you know, I did a blog post and I talk about this in more detail. Go back to the site and see this. Or I've got a picture or something. They'll put a post up on their site that the content's only available on the site. So again, if your podcast is about driving people to your website, you have to have something at the website beyond the podcast for them to go to do.
Unique content. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, again, you have to look at what your goal. If your goal is to drive people back to your website, then you have to talk to them about what that special content is on your website, why they should go there. If it's just about, hey, there's a link on the web page, you can have that in your show notes and they can click that link right from their iOS device or, you know, Android device in the show notes. And this comes back to why you should have an app, by the way, for your podcast. It's really important, in my opinion, is one of the most important things you can do. If you had to choose between having a website or an app for your show, you choose the app.
Because
it's an app-centric world. Uh-huh. And people, I mean, 1.5 billion people every month download apps. Over 1.5 billion people download apps. About 100 million people download podcasts. So you have a much bigger audience getting out there in the app stores. But people just live on apps nowadays. It's become, you know, if I said to you, you have a business and you don't have an app for your business, what would you think of someone at this point in time?
Well, I'm feeling very self-conscious right now.
Well, I mean, if you have a business and you don't have an app, people go, really? Well, it's the same thing with a podcast. If you have a podcast and you don't have your standalone app for your podcast, you're not fully committed to your podcast. And you're missing out on the home screen real estate and branding opportunity for that, you know. And you know, you host with Libsyn, you can have an app real quick, and you know, iOS and Android, Windows Phone 8, and that app can have audio content, video content, PDFs, blog posts, can have everything in there that you need for your digital world. So you don't have to even send people back to your website. They're right there in their app, and you can just say, go and look at the blog post in that right there on the device while they're out walking the dog.
Yeah. You know, speaking of apps and the mobile world that we're living in, one of the things that, that we see as a potential direction that podcasting could take is kind of away from the sound studio creation of content and into, you know, I'll say like the Twitterizing of podcasting where, you know, content is recorded, uploaded, and distributed all on your phone. I think we're a ways away from that because of partly because of the technology on the recording and editing side. But if you just look at how content has been created and how that's sort of evolved over time, I think the written word is largely, you know, being moved to mobile now. And I wonder how much and when it will go to sort of a mobile-centric content creation for podcasting in the future.
I have one of my podcasts. It's called KC Startup 411. Create it all on an iOS device. I would go, for those familiar with 1 Million Cups, I would go to 1 Million Cups at 8 a.m. It starts at 9, and I would meet someone at 8 a.m., and we would talk for a few minutes. We'd do a 20-minute interview, and I would have that interview done and uploaded from my iPhone before 9 a.m.
What kind of technology are you using to record and distribute it?
The best app out there, without a doubt, on the it's on the iOS device. It's called Boss Jock. And Boss Jock is a great app. One word, B-O-S-S-J-O-C-K. Boss Jock, $10. And it's a great app for recording and creating podcasts. And you can export from it right to your Libsyn account and have it upload and go publish as MP3 file. So that's the beauty of it. It exports. And then if you do need to do editing, you can copy out what you just recorded from it and audio paste it into Twisted Wave Editor. So if you want to do recording, Boss Jock. If you want to do editing, Twisted Wave Editor. And they're both $10 apps. And then you can take it out of Twisted Wave Editor, back into Boss Jock, and export as an MP3. And
That's
you can do
awesome.
It all from your iPhone or your iPad Pro, or your iPad Mini, or whatever iOS device you want. So it's already there. There are other podcasters that are 100% podcasting from their iOS devices, not touching a computer anymore, because you really don't have to. You can be, like you said, you can be mobile. And I've done mobile interviews where I record the interviews onto the iOS device and then take it back later. And do if I have to do heavy editing, I'll do that on the computer. But just recording and finishing it all, if you don't really care about it being perfect, you can do that from your iOS device. And honestly, the biggest shows out there don't worry about being perfect. They worry about being really good content.
Yeah.
I make it sound. I mean, there's a misnomer out there that you have to sound like This American Life to be popular, and you don't.
Yeah, we worked with James Altucher for a period of time, and I mean, the fantastic show, and I think that's the best example I give people of if your content is really great, your show will be successful. I mean, he would record in like going down the highway in the car or something, or his guest would be, and we would get some of the files and I would say, come on, honestly, like, well, you know, we're not magicians. I mean, our guys are really good with this, but, and they would definitely sound better than when we got them. But, yeah, I think that's, for me, that's the best example of superior content trumps quality every time.
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
So,
hey, Rob, sorry, just real quick before I forget, one question on the microphone setup. When you're recording with your iPhone, what microphone setup do you use, especially when you have a guest?
I've got a couple different mics I use. I like the iRig mic, HD mic from IK Multimedia, and that plugs right into the Lightning port of your iPhone. And I like that for a one mic setup. iRig also has the iRig mic lav dual setup where you can have two lav mics, and so you can connect yourself and the guest and record in through the headphone jack.
Yeah.
So those are the two ones. The other, the ATR2100, is another good mic to use, and that might be one you're going to have to use in the future versus the iRig, because the iRig doesn't have a headphone jack, and if the next iPhone comes out sans a headphone jack, you're going to need a mic that has a headphone jack so you can monitor.
Yeah.
So you know, the ATR2100 probably would become a popular device for recording on the iOS just because it has the headphone jack on it, which was the reason I didn't use it versus the iRig, because I liked having the headphones plugged into the phone and not into the mic when I'm going back and forth with a single mic. I didn't have my headphones yanked out.
Sure, sure. Yeah, interesting. That's cool. I've done some podcasting at conferences before, and I know you just got back from Podcast Movement a bit ago. But having a very mobile solution for that would be key, because setting up the laptop and getting out the mic is just a hassle. I'll have to get my rig all set up before I have a conference here in a couple months I'm going to go to. So,
I mean, I go in with like a sports coat, mic on one side, and iPhone in the other inside pocket, and that's it. I'm not carrying a bag or anything else. It's that simple of a setup. So you can go in with a sports coat and have your recording equipment with you, which is great, because say maybe you're going to a tech conference locally and you don't know if you're going to be recording people. And now you're walking around this tech conference with this heavy bag with all this equipment and going, hey, do you want to, you know, take a few minutes here to record? And you can pull it all out. Now you pull out an iPhone, plug it in and go, let's talk. Mm-hmm. And then you put everything away and then you walk around and you find another unsuspecting victim and then you pull out your equipment and you blindside them.
Right. Yeah, because so much of it is the spontaneity in the moment of, mm-hmm. of grabbing that particular thing. So, yeah, that's awesome. So can you talk a little about the feed and kind of what you guys are doing with your own podcast, the official Libsyn podcast?
Yeah, well, I say I'm the co-host, but the reality is Elsie's the producer. So Elsie does the hard work. She does all the production and bringing it all together. So Elsie is really the driving force behind that. And I get to say, I'm the cranky old guy that just shows up on every other Friday and records. And we have fun. We have a good banter back and forth. It's a tech show, but we think it's a fun show to listen to. And we just talk about podcasting. We're not there to pitch Libsyn. We are answering people's questions, and the majority of the questions are not Libsyn related. They're podcasting related. Mm-hmm. And between myself and Elsie, we have 22 plus, 23, 24 years of, you know, podcasting experience. So we've been doing this a long time. Both of us have been around before, you know, iTunes launched. So we know podcasting. So from a tech point of view, we're good. And Elsie is really, really good on the social media side. So some questions come up about that. She covers those, and if there's questions that come up about RSS feeds, then I can get into digging into the weeds of the RSS feed questions.
Yeah, yeah. What do you guys see? Have you seen in terms of your 76 episodes and doing it every week? That's a year and a half or so, I guess, right?
Mm-hmm. A few years, actually.
A few years. Mm-hmm. What have you guys seen in terms of sort of growth or engagement from the show?
Well, yeah. First off, it's a tech podcast about podcasting, and all podcasts about podcasting are never going to be large. There's like a 5,000. Yeah, there's about a 5,000 per episode listener glass ceiling that just, you know, no one ever breaks through, no matter who the podcast about podcasting is, whatever they claim their numbers are. There's this like 5,000 number that nobody seems to break through, and we're in the, I think, about 2,000 range per episode, which is great because it's a podcast about podcasting. It's so niche. And our goal, though, was never really about numbers because we knew it was going to be low. Our goal was about community engagement. And that's what we do that podcast about. We're there to get listener feedback and to engage with Libsyn users and podcasters in general. We get quite a few emails from people who say, oh, I don't host with Libsyn, but I love your podcast. Well, that's great, because someday down the line when they don't love their host anymore, I know who they're going to switch to. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we look at it as a long-term play. And honestly, if you're in the podcasting world, you know, you need to have kind of a podcast about podcasting. It shows that you're in the space, not just trying to sell to the space.
Sure, sure. One of the three questions we get all the time is, you know, who should I host with? And this is not a Libsyn advertisement, but, you know, honestly, we recommend for almost everybody, we recommend hosting with you guys. All three of my shows are hosted with you guys. And the primary reason, two reasons. One, I'm a big fan in general of kind of going with the biggest player in almost anything that I do in terms of, you know, tech. Is, you know, the chances of Libsyn going down are pretty much zero, right? So it's kind of like Amazon. The chance of Amazon not working for hosting is almost zero. Yeah. But also, I mean, the big reason for our customers, is the concept of destinations. And we have a lot of customers who are hosted elsewhere who end up having to sort of duplicate their content over to SoundCloud in particular. That's the one that we get the most often. Can you talk a bit about destinations and kind of how that has evolved as the, you know, in the platform perspective and what you see that looking like in the future?
Our primary goal, Libsyn, has always been to make it easy for podcasters to get their content out to the world. Now, in the early days, that meant simply the RSS feed, and then after that, iTunes. You know, because when Libsyn started, it was prior to the iTunes even launching. But then it became about iTunes, you know, and the RSS feed in iTunes. And iTunes is still, don't get me wrong, iTunes is still the 800-pound gorilla. It's where, you know, everything else combined doesn't even equal iTunes. But there are new places and new destinations coming up, and our goal is to help people get out there. So Google Play Music, we have a feed specifically designed for Google Play Music. We just announced iHeartRadio. So if you've been hosting with Libsyn for 2 months, you can go into your destinations section in your account and click Add New, and you'll see an iHeartRadio one, and you fill out the form, and you click, yes, I accept the terms, and hit Save. And that's it. Your show will get into iHeartRadio. You don't even have to go to iHeartRadio to submit. It's all done right in there. We have SoundCloud, so you can connect SoundCloud where it'll publish the files to SoundCloud. We have it now with YouTube, so it'll take your audio file and convert it to a video file and publish it to YouTube. So those are different places that we make it easy for the producers to get out there to. We also have a relationship with Spotify. If you're chosen by them, you can get into Spotify. So our goal is really simple. It's to make your content available everywhere and then to customize on a destination. So if you look at the destination when you set it up for iHeartRadio, there's a lot more information in there than is in your regular RSS feed. There's bios for each host. So if you have multiple co-hosts, you can submit and then have information for each of the hosts, including a picture of the host, their Twitter, their LinkedIn, their Google Play or the Google Plus, I think it is, and even their Instagram accounts for each of the co-hosts, and then the information about the show itself. This is stuff that you couldn't do if you were just trying to submit your RSS feed to iHeart, because all this information would break, isn't normal tags that are in your feeds. So they would break the feed that goes to iTunes. And I think that's where we're trying to separate is, we don't think you should submit the same feed to iTunes that you submit to Google Play, because at some point in the future, iTunes and Google Play are going to have a difference of opinion on what should be the standard categories. And then you have to pick which parent do you want to go live with?
Right.
You know, they're going to have a divorce, and do you want to go live with Ma or do you want to go live with Dad? And we think you should be able to have a room in both houses, mm-hmm. and not have to pick. And that's the whole philosophy behind destinations. It's to make your show future-proof and to increase your distribution today. iHeartRadio has really worked out well for my own show. I've already seen a good uptick at iHeartRadio. We've seen some shows really big upticks at iHeartRadio. iHeartRadio's got 85 million monthly active subscribers, plus many more than that overall. The app's been downloaded a billion times, but you know they have 85 million core registered active users, and that's about the same size audience as there is for podcasting. So you're opening yourself up to a nice new group of potential listeners to your show.
Yeah.
Be everywhere.
Right. Yeah, I love it. No, I love it. And I think that one thing that is worth mentioning as well is for a long time, I implemented and sort of advocated for a lot of our customers basing our feed on WordPress, and I know from talking to you before that this is, you know, obviously something you guys don't love, but we ran into it head on with one of our bigger customers is, you know, if there's sort of a weird ASCII character or something in a post that breaks the feed, then your show just goes down and no new episodes are released, and you have to wait for a listener to email you and say, hey, what the hell is going on? Where's the show? Blah, 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 blah. Now, I know you guys a couple months ago maybe released like a feed validator right within when you're creating an episode, so that once you post right. everything in there, it says, yep, your feed is still good. Go ahead and you know, continue. I think it's worth mentioning. It's really wonderful. Mm-hmm. Anyone who's ever had a feed break in WordPress before, this would you know, pretty much mitigate that entirely.
Yeah, there are people out there that heavily promote WordPress for managing your show. Those people also are known as WordPress consultants, and they charge $250 an hour, and there's a reason why they promote it. WordPress is a convoluted mess when it comes to your RSS feed. It's horrible, horrible when it comes to RSS feeds. WordPress is great for websites, and I say, fine, have your website on WordPress. But here's the thing. When you start adding plugins, which is the number one reason to use WordPress, plugins start breaking other plugins.
Yep.
And the number one reported issues in the iTunes support forums is WordPress-related issues. WordPress causes more problems for podcasters than anything else. And I just tell people, go and look at the top 200 shows in iTunes, look at their RSS feeds, and see how many of the top 200 shows are using WordPress to manage their feeds. Is Joe Rogan using it? Nope. Is Mark Maron using it? Nope. Is The Nerdist using it? Nope. You know, the biggest shows out there are not using WordPress to manage their feed. Why? Because they know it doesn't stand up to high traffic, and they don't want a feed that's going to break. Your RSS feed is the most important part of your podcast. 86-85% roughly of your downloads are going to come from your RSS feed. And you want to have the most reliable feed. That is your lifeblood for your podcast, which was like when SoundCloud had their quote technical update, and they went 72 plus hours where people's feeds weren't working. Was like, whoa.
Yeah.
You know, if you don't want to host with Libsyn, fine, just don't host at SoundCloud. They don't get podcasting. They don't understand the RSS feed is the most important thing as a podcaster. And so you have to have a reliable feed. You know, and we look at it as really reliable. And if you host with Libsyn, you get 100% control of that feed. You can bring in your own domain name. If you register a slug with Libsyn, it's yours for life, even if you cancel your account. No one in 11 and a half years has ever lost their audience. Now, almost 12 years. No one's ever lost an audience member from their RSS feed because they host it with Libsyn.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's great. It's great. We've been very happy, not just with our shows, but all of our customers. It's been really great. So, okay. So look into your crystal ball a little bit. Like to have a little fun with this. We talked about mobile a little bit and where podcasting is going in terms of mobile content creation. It touched on sort of iTunes and Google really kind of maybe going head to head with podcast distribution and audiences in the future. But what do you see, say, in the next 2 years? So by 2018, where's podcasting headed?
Everywhere but Pandora. I made a joke recently. I said, I'm going to be able to say, you know, today in iOS, which is my main podcast, find it everywhere but Pandora. More and more, if a service has audio, like, you know, again, Spotify, iHeart, Google Play Music, they're introducing in podcasting. And that's great. That's great for podcasting. Mobile is still the biggest place. 77%+ of our downloads last month, at least I haven't run the last month, but in June, were directly to mobile devices. And that just keeps increasing. So it's really, the future, by the way, isn't the quote unquote, the connected car. The connected car is really just a glorified Bluetooth speaker for your smartphone, mm-hmm. which continues to be the future of your podcast for podcasting. And what app people choose on that smartphone doesn't really matter to us if it's Spotify or if it's iHeartRadio or if it's Google Play Music or the podcast app or Overcast. There's a lot of apps now. And that's the beauty of the future for podcasting. It's going everywhere. And anybody that has audio content, any apps that have audio content, realize that it's not just music. They have to have podcasting to keep audiences there as well.
Awesome. Rob, can you share with folks where they can kind of find out more about you and Libsyn and what you guys are up to with your show?
Sure. Our podcast, the main one, again, we talked about earlier for Libsyn is The Feed. And you can go to The Feed. Libsyn.com, and that's a site to go and listen to it, and there's buttons to go off and subscribe, or you can just search The Feed and then space Libsyn, and so The space Feed space Libsyn in iTunes. It's not the one about food, it's the one about tech. there is another podcast called The Feed in iTunes, and that happens. They actually host with Libsyn too, but we were first. They are bigger though, because they're about food. You know, it's more foodies. So that, you know, that breaks our heart. Elsie and I see that. We know what their numbers are. We're like, oh man, they're even bigger than us, and they started after us.
Tough to compete with, though, right?
Yeah, podcasts about podcasting are what they are. It's a very niche group, or niche of a niche, and but we love it. We love doing the podcast. We try to have fun with it, and we hope, you know, people check it out if they want to hear it. Not, you know, we don't think it's a boring show. We think it's Elsie has a lot of humor that she brings to it.
Awesome. Hey, Rob, I really appreciate your time today. Thanks for all your insights and sharing everything with our audience. And we'll catch up with you soon.
All right, Craig, thank you so much for having me on the show.
I hope you enjoyed the show today. To find out more and check out all of the previous episodes, head on over to podcastmotor.com/show. I'd love to hear from you. If you can leave a rating and review in iTunes, please let me know what you think of the show. The ratings and reviews help us get more exposure to the show and bring on more awesome guests. All right, we'll see you next time.